Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to give this seminar. And thank you all for coming to my talk. So I'm Bo Xiao, and I'm a research fellow in CCQ and Flatiron Institute. Before I give the seminar today, so let me spend a few minutes to quickly introduce the research summary for the research directions I have been working on. So in general, I'm very interested in this exotic phenomenon and the phase transitions in many electron systems. I use different flavors of quantum Monte Carlo and MPS to study microscopic lattice models. And so one class of research direction involved this electron phonon and the fermion. In general, it's fermion boson, but electron phonons. There's a lot of interesting. It's motivated by recent experiments in cuprates. And it turns out that the phonon plays an important role. So there's a lot, quite a significant amount of research going on in this direction. So my expertise in this direction, just different long range electron phonon interactions, or we say momentum dependent electron phonon interactions, and also different type format of electron phonon couplings. There's a lot of stuff going on, and for this research area, so I think the charge density wave and superconductivity and the disorder is the main topic. And the second direction of the class of directions of my research is if you look at the publications in Flatiron, right, you find a significant amount of them are about Hubbard model, right? So it's a Hubbard model. So I'll explain this more a little bit later in the project. And also I want to mention this Hubbard is not only Hubbard model, it has a natural connection to AMO physics. And there's a lot of things going on there. And in both of these directions, I do a lot of this algorithm development, like it reduces the auto correction time and control the sign problems from the QMC side, quantum Monte Carlo side. So because in the audience, there might be a lot of the machine learning experts. So I don't want to know I'm an expert, but I do use machine learning a lot in my research and combined with MPS based. So I especially use this projective measurement, this snapshot to discover this off diagonal long range order. I'll cover this later. And also recently, because of this quantum computation, there's we are inspired like this Honeywell experiment. They can they can recycle the qubits, use quite a few, 11 qubits to simulate maybe half hundred chain. And they can do this measurement to study the real-time dynamics, which is something we are working on with Miles Studemeyer and Joseph Tindall. Yeah, okay. So then let me just dive into this first project. I'm talking about this temperature dependence of spin and the charge orders in the doped two-dimensional Hubbard model. So this is really motivated by this real materials like this lanthanum copper oxide. So it's just a compound parent. It's well known for this a lot of this high temperature superconductors. So it's a 3D materials, but you get layers for this copper and oxide layers, and the intercoupling interactions between different layers is very weak. So we can use this quasi 2D structure to describe this. And as long as we dope this materials, we use some strontium, and this materials just becomes superconductors. So there's a lot of phenomena in this class of materials. So you get the superconductivity and the pseudo gap strange metal, and also strip orders. So for this talk, I'll just focus on the strip orders. So on the right, it's just this experiment from Tronquada. So let me explain this a little bit more concise. So for each side, if you get the arrows, we can just look at the P, which is a this LD as CO, right? So for each side, if you got this arrows, it just means a spin. And if you got emptied, that just means a spin zero. So for this empty side, it just means a hole. In principle, you should get one particle per side, but if you just remove particles, we call this hole doping. So you get this empty, just a hole. And if you got this black circle, that means there's a particle there, but the spin, its effective spin is zero. So in this sense, you just get this reverse of a zero magnetization, and in the middle you just get this magnetic domain, AFM, anti-ferromagnetic domain. So it's just separated by this hose. So this is a vertical stripe. And on the left is just, you know, this is a diagonal stripes, but this is totally another different class of insulating phases. So for today's talk, we'll just be focused on these linear stripes. Okay, so let me introduce the Hubbard model a little bit. And the Hubbard model is, so we need to, I think I need to be very precise here. So it's just you put this Hubbard model on a 2D lattice, which is square lattice, because we know that geometry and the dimensionality is very, very important. So in 1D and the infinite dimensions, you can solve this model exactly. Because of the connection with the Kubrick's, we just want to study this model in 2D. And the geometry also plays a very important role. Like there's a honeycomb octagonal lattice. You'll see totally different lattice. So for today's talk, just a square lattice, 2D. And we are studying this Hodopian and the strong coupling limit. So this Hodopian, in principle, you get this lattice and you allow the electron to hop around the nearest neighbor side. And you on the each side, if you put two electrons on the same side, you get the Coulomb interactions. And because we formulated this model in this particle symmetric form and in grand canonical ensemble, so we use this chemical potential to tune the particle numbers. And so for this talk, I just focus on this nearest neighbor hopping. So the next nearest hopping T prime is something we are in preparation. So probably we are still trying to understand some phenomena there. So in principle, you should get one particle per side. And so you get this half heating, but if you try to remove the particles and you just dope away from half heating. So this is what we call Hodoping. And if you just fully transform this non-interacting Hamiltonian, like this C dagger C and C dagger C, right, this T, and you just do this, you get the non-interacting band structure with 2T times cosine KS and cosine KY. You know the band structure is between negative 40 and plus 40, right? So you know the bandwidth is 8T. So in this talk, I focus on this strong coupling limit, and which the U equal to 6 and 8. I also want to point out in the weak coupling limit, V is very small, the phases is totally different. So I just need to pull the picture, you know, pin down the point very exactly. So it's a 2D square lattice, strong coupling limit, and the whole doping along certain doping point. What I want to say, this phase diagram is somehow just schematic. If you look at it closely, this finite temperature version and this ground state version, they even don't match each other. So there's a lot of stuff going on. So, but it is well understood that at half heating, the state is an anti-ferromagnetic order. So if you just see the picture here, so if you get two spins which are parallel, so you are not allowed to hop the spin, right? If you get a spin in anti-parallel, so in principle you can get the second order perturbation theory. There's some virtual hopping. There's a spin up can hop into the next side and hop back. So in this case, you can lower the temperature. Lower the energy by the T square divided by U, which is a super exchange. So this is why at half heating you just get AFM orders, but in the true Langevin order should be only at the ground state. That's to make that clear. Okay, so let me talk about some numerical evidence and why this is exciting for this Hubbard model. So I think this is the real emerging paper in this field, but I'll say more about this. So in principle, it's just a bunch of the best researchers for each method, and they use this AFQMC, this PEPS, and this DMRG. They try to study the same models or the same parameters, but they use a different approach and compare with them. And because this one is a ground state study, so the energy will be a very good numbers to tell you which one is. Okay, so let me explain what can we see for the stripe orders in this Hubbard model. So let's use the DMRG as example, because for the narrow cylinders, there's a quasi 1D system, right? People tend to believe that DMRG is the best solution or the exact solution, right? So although we see some convergence issues sometimes in the runs, but in most of our time, we get the exact solution. But let's say there's a DMRG. So the green dot here just means the hole density, right? You can see the hole density from the edge to the middle. It's a decreasing and increase. And there's middle, and this middle graded dashed line, and from the middle and increasing. So in principle, in this case, you see two periods of stripe, and But if you take out the spin, because this light is a bipartite, so in principle, spin up should be surrounded by spin down, and the spin down electron should be surrounded by spin up electron. And if you take a look at this dashed line, so you do see this spin, they are parallel, so you get a pi shift in this case. But for the spin orders, it takes 16 times 2. This is one whole wavelength. So this is what we call the field stripe. So the spin order is just a two divided by delta. I'll say this delta later. So in general, the information is that the spin wavelength is twice of the charge wavelengths, and they are coupled to each other in the real space. In momentum space, you can also see the peak position. So there's also a relation there. So the delta is here is just the doping level. So the spin wavelengths are just 2 divided by that delta, and the charge wavelengths are just 1 divided by delta. So this is what we see in numerics, right? We call this field stripe. I want to point this out in experiment in the real materials. What we see is half stripe, it's not this stripe. So the definition of half stripe just means the wavelength is half of what we see in numerics, right? So there's a 1/2 difference. And I'll touch that part later, but it's a difference. And the second paper here is from this paper. So the first one is determining this at the ground state, at this one is doping, this is strong interaction. The ground state is a stripe order, wavelength is 8. And then the second paper just tells you at exactly the same doping, the same parameter regime, there's no superconductivity. So this is the pinch point. I think this is a pinpoint of the question, the whole picture. But I have to say, this stripe orders is not the first time, you know, discovered in 2017, back in 1990. So Yang Zhenner had this beautiful mean field paper about this 2-band Hubbard model. They already discovered stripe orders. And there's a bunch of mean field solutions. And you do see this stripe orders. Except for the mean, besides the mean field levels, and also for the many body levels, there's a tons of different numerical algorithms development recently. So you can see stripe orders. One is this determined quantum Monte Carlo approach. This approach has a very severe sign problem. So it is limited to very high temperature. But at high temperature, this method is numerical exact, so it can give you exact solutions. So what we see is this some results from Tom Darrow's group from Stanford, and the general idea is the computer here. So on the left is just a spin density, it's 1-point function. On the right is just a spin correlation function. It's a 2-point functions, and also I want to mention because it is a bipartite like this, you get this phase factor. So for each spin correlation functions in the SZ direction, you do times this phase factor. So you flip the spin. In that sense, if you see this one whole color, that means AF domain, and it shift a different color, that means this pi shift is what you see on the bottom left. You see this dashed line, that's the pi shift. So the general idea is at half fitting, because the doping is zero, right? You can think about you get a stripe order, but the wavelength is infinite, right? As long as you dope this, the stripe order, the wavelength should shrink. So that's the information here. But this is high temperature from the DQMC readout. Except for DM QMC readout, we also got this tensor network readouts. I want to point out for this Hubbard model in the strong coupling, you can map to TJ models. So there's a tons of research done by Stephen White and Scalapino back in 1990 or early 2000, right? They get tons of readouts about this TJ model and stripe orders. It's in this. And recently, the DMRG and at the ground state DMRG and the finite temperature is met. And they try to develop this and go to this quasi 1D, maybe these four cylinders, and study this fermionic case. So this is a recent work by Alex Vitek and also student Miles student Meyer, and they can study this with four cylinders at finite temperatures. They can also see the stripe orders formulate. So again, different colors just mean different AF domains, and this circles just means whole density. You can see the whole density is the largest at the pi shift point. But I want to point out, so until now for the fermionic case, the tensor network is limited by the these four cylinders. Right, so it tells us a lot of useful information, but still there's a But still, for the lattice models, we want to go to the thermodynamic limit. So in this case, the V4, something we see in V4, it might be just a quasi 1D physics instead of the 2D physics. So this is why the limitation. So, okay.
But so we also mentioned that the DMRG results had convergence issues. Can you explain that? And how do we understand convergence in DMRG?
What I'm trying to say, because Roger, you know, if you increase this cylinder width like equal to 6, and the entanglement increase exponentially, right? So, in general, in some cases, like primitive regimes, we clearly know that the expected state should be striped orders. But you know, for DMRG, we just run into a different orders, right? We cannot converge to the right state. However, if we take the right state at the initial state, and in that case, we can converge to the right state.
So if you start the DMRG with the trial wave function in the right state, then it tends to stay in it. But if you try and start with some random state, you'll converge to something that doesn't have a good energy or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, probably I should not say the DMRG has a convergence issues, right? I don't want to get people unhappy. So sometimes, yeah, exactly to the point, because it's a variational method, right? So it really depends on where you start. So if you guess, you know, you'll get a true minimum, global minimum. If you're super smart, you just get, you know, what the solution is super close to this solution. It takes, you know, just a few iterations to converge to this. However, if you start from a horrible, you know, very, very bad guess, so it might take a long, long time to converge it, even not converge to a global minimum, but you know, some local minimum, right? So and I also want to say, because I probably didn't deliver this message clearly. So if you see here, so the result is a different stripe, but the stripe orders with a different wavelength. If you see the DMRG result and also the other results, these stripes, they have energy, which is super, super close. So it really takes a lot of efforts, you know, to resolve which one has the lowest energy. But because as you can see, the wavelength is wave 7 of 5, right? And the energy is very, very close.
Okay, so yeah, really that's like a... So that's energy density. That's E delta E over T. I'm just trying to understand. So it's like third decimal place.
Yes. So the delta E, that means because we take this, not V, they take the reference point, like this lambda equal to 8, this energy as a reference, right? They computed the energy difference with this point. That is the energy. The T is just a unit of T, because that is Hubbard model. The unit, energy unit is T. So yep, that's the case.
One more question. The figures on the left, what papers are those from?
I'm sorry. So I should have said this in earlier. So each time, as long as it's not on my paper, I list the reference. It's in color in blue. That's the reference. Yeah.
Okay. So, but are those part of the many, you know, the Simon's many electron collaboration results? Where they, is that, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but I know this paper is it's a collaboration between Garnet Chan and Shi Wei, and also Stephen White, and also probably Philip Corbett, right? I'm not sure if part of the Simon's collaboration, but it's in the same group of people. This might be before, or maybe just might be just, you know, Simon's collaboration. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
I don't know that. Yeah. Okay. So let me summarize, because I think I searched the internet last year, right? There's a 5,000 paper on Hubbard model, right? Until now, it's even more. So what's the point to do this more? So I think we really enter a regime, we might can solve the Hubbard model in certain parameter regime with a certain accuracy. We might see some, you know, final convincing result convergence, right? Because for the high temperature, we got DQMC, it's numerically exact, DMRG, ground state, numerically exact, right? We can handshake between the high temperature and the ground state, and we can benchmark around the different approach, right? So this is really a great chance. So for this work, what we study, the main point, I think the punchline is, so, okay, if the ground state is a spin order plus charge order, right? We all know the spin order because you got SU2 symmetry, that phase transition should happen at T equal to zero. How about the charge order? Is the charge or long range order formed at some certain finite temperature are also ground state, right? This is an open question. So this is what we try to answer. So let me check the time. Yeah, I might run behind my schedule, but I'll try to be quick for this. So in principle, let me just explain this AFQMC because it's an approximation method, right? So I want to really explain this carefully and it tells you why it's convincing that our result is really somehow accurate. It's really accurate. So the general idea is at any finite temperature, if we want to compute some observables, right, you just need the trial density matrix, right? That tells you all the information. So which is how do you compute this? So for the Monte Carlo, so because we got the 2D quantum problems, we just want to map this 2D quantum problem to 2 plus 1D classical problems. So in principle, we get this partition function. We want to compute the trees, and we just discretize this. We call this, you know, each small piece called a time slice, right? So for each time slice, you can decompose this. It's approximation because you get this shorter approximation because this k is just a single particle, it's just the Hopping terms, and this v including two particles like this u and I up and I down, right? This two particle interactions, and because they don't commute, you get a shorter decomposition. In this, if you do this decomposition, you get a delta tau equal to third order, right? If the delta tau is small enough, so it should be accurate enough, right? So, but if you compute the whole trace, right, this is just recovered to delta tau square approximation. I just want to make sure everything is accurate. So this is how do we do this, right? So but there's still, you know, two particle interactions, this delta V, how do we deal with this? Oh, I'm sorry, there should be delta tau. There should be a tau here. So yeah, so how do we do this? So we can do this Hubbard transformation. In principle, we just, you know, decouple this two-body interaction to a one-body interaction coupled to an auxiliary field. We just introduce a field, right? So that's how do we do this. But this field could be continuous or discrete. In this case, we just use this discrete field. And for this Hubbard repulsive Hubbard model, so this is the formula we take. So sometimes people talk about this, we decouple in a spin channel, right? So if the unactive, you just decouple to the charge channel, it's just different formats, right? So for each B propagator, it's just this is exponential. So for each side, because this XL is just a vector, so for each side, we introduce one auxiliary field, right? So if you get an N side, so that's just an N auxiliary field, and you get a time slice, right? So this is how do we do this for in the DQMC set. So, but there's no way, but we don't, there's no universal way to convince, to find out, right? This determinant is all the time is positive, right? In principle, it could be positive and negative, right? So if you just sample the absolute value of the weight, so in principle, in the end, what contributes because of the positive, some part of a positive or some part of a negative, they just cancel each other. So you only get this shaded area contribute, right? So we do need a smart way to know how to control this sign problem. By the way, I want to mention because at a certain, this sign problem is a basis dependent, right? At a certain feeling, like if you got a special particle symmetry, right? You don't have sign problem, right? So the spin up determinant would just equal to some positive number times spin down determinant. So you don't have sign problem at all. At a certain symmetry or some clever basis rotation, you can get rid of the sign problem. But it's not universal, right? So we need a better way to control this same problem. So this is the idea generated, right? So in principle, if you think about because in traditional DQMC, we just generate all the auxiliary field and we try to use a propose a move for each auxiliary field, right? In the Markov chain process, right? That's how we do this. But how about, you know, we don't generate all the auxiliary field for all the time slice. We just generate auxiliary fields for one time slice by one time slice. Right, so this is why, you know, for this is why the formula here, so the bx1 just means we have this time slice for x1 until xl, but later we don't have time slice, right? We don't generate we do have time slice, sorry, we don't generate the auxiliary field. But how do we do that? So we still need to compute the weight, right? If the weight is positive, we keep it. If the weight is negative, we just throw it away. So, but in the later time slice, we don't have auxiliary field. So how do we do this? We just introduce this trial density matrix in the finite temperature version, but in the ground state, it's a trial wave function. So in principle, there's a trial wave function, there's a single particle, it's just a mean field level solution. So we don't need auxiliary field. We can just compute the weight, the determinant, right? If positive, we keep, and negative, we just throw it away. So this is somehow the picture here. So if you're starting from the left and you just propagate at a certain time slice, it becomes zero, right? So later the contribution will be the sum and the positive and the negative, they will be cancel each other. So we just throw this away. So we just keep sampling this positive part. This path we should stay above zero positive all the time. We just sample this path. I think that's the general idea. Okay. I think I need to speed up a little bit, so it's I might run behind schedule. So okay, so this is the work we do. So, but you know, I already told you this is approximation, but I want to convince you this approximation really works well, and be really working hard to develop, you know, some numerical algorithms to develop this. Okay, so in principle, so it's clear. So we do have this many body calculations, but at the same time, we need a single particle, a trial wave function, right? It's which mean field level. But in principle, we can improve this trial wave function. So let me walk you through what we are doing here. So let's say we want to do this many body calculations, which is U equal to 8, the doping is 1/8, and temperature is 18, right? We know what the spin orders looks like. We know what the charge order looks like. And at the same time, we introduce this single independent particle, which is an unrestricted Hartree fog, right? You just get the Hartree fog. And plus, we also have this chemical potential because the Hartree fog is also in grand canonical ensembles. And we introduced this pinning field here. Yeah, let me explain the pinning field a little bit more carefully. So in principle, you see this lattice. And for the left edge, we can just put some defects. Just like experiment, if you put some defects in the crystal, right, the system will respond to the defects. And if the true long range order, if it grows a true long range order, if short range, it just grow with a finite length, right? That's the general idea. But there's so many technical details. So we needed to do extrapolation, because if we don't want to see some physics just because of pinning field. So we want to make sure that pinning field go to zero gradually. And we also want to check different system size. So that's all the careful checks we do, right? But here you just put a pinning field here. So for the many body, you got a pinning field. For the single particle, you also got a pinning field. So this return back to the Roger's question. So for this setting, we just start the single particle Hamiltonian with the same effect, effective U, Coulomb interaction, and effective beta, which essentially we know that is we might at this parameter regime that we'll see different physical phenomena, because we all know the mean field solution, they just overestimate the orders, right? So if you add this, you can see the upper panel. So this is what you see, it's just a diagonal stripes. And we use this as a trial density matrix feeding into this many particle for AFQMC, right? The next step is we run the AFQMC solution, and we just get the density from AFQMC, right? But for the left bottom, we have this grid of this Hartree fog solution, which has two parameters. One is U effective, another is beta effective, right? We have a grid of solutions. We just compare the QMC output electron density with these solutions and find out the minimum place. The chi-square tells you where is the parameters. At that place, the single particle density and the many QMC density, they are the difference between them is the minimal, right? We just march to that point, use that point at the next round FQMC input the data. So we just keep this iteration again until final few iterations. The position of the mean field, the mean field solution parameters or the position on this graph doesn't change at all. So we know it's converged. So The bottom is also pin field level, but you know this is a finally converged trial density matrix. It's cracked, just a linear stripe. So we just go through from the diagonal to linear stripe. So this is how do we prove this? How do you improve this self consistently? So with this weapon, so we just go ahead and study some some physical case. So like this is U equal to 6, this is strong coupling limit, and delta equal to 1 divided by 5. I'll say why this region later. So for each curve you see here, so it's a converged result. In other words, for each curve here, we do this, you know, walking along this this map of Hartree-Fock solutions, and we find the best solution, the converged result. And the length of this is a 20 lengths, but you know, we just increase this because we want to reach the thermal dynamic limit in 2D. So as you can see, as we lower the temperature, right? So, oh, let me explain. So what I plot here is that this spin density, just one particle function, because we got a spin pinning field here. So as a response, a linear response series. So we should look at it as one point function as response. And also because of this bipartite lattice, I just computed this, there's an extra phase factor here. So there's a minus one Lx plus S, so Ly. Right, and in principle, because we use pinning field on the x direction, so we use open boundary condition in that direction. But in the y direction, because we use a periodic boundary condition, in that case, we just need to do the average, and in that case, we get a better statistics. So this is what I plot.
Sorry, Bor, are these square open boundary systems? Or are they rectangular?
This is a cylinder, rectangular. So
it's
in
a
principle.
Cylinder. Okay.
Yeah, because in X direction, you get 20 sites. And in Y direction, you just get 6, 8, and 10. So it's a cylinder. But in the long direction, it's an open boundary condition. In the short direction, it's a periodic boundary condition.
Okay, so it's like a DMRG geometry, but you're using auxiliary field Monte Carlo for this, right?
Yes, and also, yeah, I also put a pinning field here, yeah, on the left edge. So, you know, some defects.
And you leave that pinning field on. You don't anneal that pinning field to zero to see if you do that, do the stripes stay? Like if you stabilize stripes with the pinning field and then gradually take the field to zero, do the stripes disappear?
No, I think in open boundary conditions, the stripe will still be there because of the time limitation, right? So I didn't include them. Because we just see this pinning field, in principle, we can do this two-point function, just like the DQMC result, right? We can just compute that. In that case, we see the stripe orders clearly. It doesn't matter, you know, stripe order is there or there. Not there, so the stripe order is real. But you know, sometimes if the correlation length is larger than your simulation cell, right, you might see some artificial effects. You really need to be careful. This is why we need to go to the 2D thermodynamic TDL, right, thermodynamic right. Limit. So yeah, but this stripe order is real. It's not because of the pinning field, but the pinning field can, you know, help us zoom in to see a larger signal.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. So then. But so this S, so somehow it's just staggered, right? So if you see all positive, that means AF domain. If you're negative, it's another AF domain, and this nodal point, it's where the hole is. But if you look at this, the message here, so it jumps somehow. This is at this parameter region, the spin and the charge orders. But I only show spin here. The spin order is a short range, it's not a long range. So I also want to mention, you know, the pinning field idea is not our original. So this is a Farquhar Saad, you know, proposed in 2013. And at the same time, there's our finite temperature result consistent with this ground state result, which we're conducting independently, right? We just converge to the same result. So, and also at this feeling, I think Sandro Sorella, yeah, we miss him, but Sandro Sorella proposed at this feeling. So the ground state use a variation of Monte Carlo. He proposed this state, it's not a stripe order, it's a superconductivity. So all the information from different methods, they just converge to the same point. This is why I say this multi-messenger is really give us a lot of information here. Yeah, this is real space information, but given the time limit, I might skip this slide. So, okay, so the final important information here. So it's, let's switch to another doping, like this consistent with the figure I showed before for the science paper, right? Just U equal to 8 and the delta equal to 1/8. So still I plotted the averaged staggered spin, right? At a very high temperature, beta equal to 3 and 6. You just see one AF domain, but with a long distance, essentially just zero. But this AF domain is induced by pinning field. And you see your lower temperature, the correlation length increase, right? Because the correlation length is increase. And if you keep lowering the I should mention on the left is the spin density, on the right is the hole density. The hole density is just 1 minus the charge density. Yeah. is Hall density. And as you lower the temperature, you do see this well-formed AF domains. So again, this is one AF domain, this is another AF domain. So if you switch a sign, right, you get a nodal point, and then you do see some periodic modulation for the Hall densities, but it's not very clear. So until you reach the lowest temperature here, so which is beta U25, and we can see corresponding to each nodal point, you see a Hall density maximum. So this is the real interrelation between the spin stripe, spin order, and the charge order inside the stripe, right? So this, but still, it's quite small. What we can do on top of this, the numerical advance we can do is we can put a charge pinning field, right? We can put a periodic charge perturbations, and we can tune that and in this form, right? Because we know that where the nodal point should be, so we can just engineer this charge perturbation, and we use this P as this control the how big the charge perturbation is, and do some extrapolation. Okay, so. For the panel C, what I showed, we just for this system size, and we just try different pinning field strengths and extrapolate to zero, and the real information is on the panel D, right? So essentially, we just try different lattice size, and also we just try for each lattice size, we do this extrapolation procedure, and then near the final, we want to see if the charge signal in the case where there's no charge pinning field. So if this transition is finite or t equal to zero. So this is the final result. So the final conclusion is for this charge perturbation. So we see this charge order do form at a finite temperature and by this delta N, which is a linear response, which can be treated as order parameters. And this is the real snapshot, just one snapshot of what the real order is on the with eight cylinders. So you do see different AF domains, and near the pi shift point, you do see the Hall density the largest. So the take home message for this one is the charge order becomes long range at finite temperature at this delta equal to 1.8. So that's the whole message for the first part. But there's tons of information I didn't touch at all, so it's in the paper. So, yeah, because of the time limitation, please go check the paper if you are interested in. So the second part I want to talk about is something based on our recent work. So use this variational uniform MPS plus this machine learning techniques to see the real questions. The real questions, because we can get some real space density snapshots, right? The density snapshot. Can we learn some off diagonal long range order from it? So that's the question. So let me motivate this a little bit. So Roger, can I ask you, could you please remind me 5 minutes before the end of my talk? I really want to thank my collaborators. Right. So that's
Okay. Let me calculate the time here. So we started at 10. So you got 20 minutes total left.
Okay. Great.
Including questions.
Good. Yeah. Okay. So this all the story starts from this AMO community, right? This quantum gas microscope. They can do this projective measurement, and they can formulate optical lattice, and they can get a picture of spin up and spin down electron densities. So they know the occupation for each side, and they know the SZ basis, right? So this is the development. And by the way, the quantum gas microscope emulator, there's one motivation for it. It's just because of the sign problem. You get this way you can get rid of the sign problems. So this is one of the original motivation. So for this quantum gas microscope, in general, it's 2D, right? But it could be used to study 1D system, right? It's like this paper, like a paper here by this Kuker. So they prepare the samples in 2D, but you can tune the lattice spacing, so they can essentially just divide the 2D quantum gas into a couple 1D system, so they can study this 1D. Here it's just a 1D Hubbard model. They do see this spin charge separations, and they can compute this spin and density correlation functions and etc. The interesting correlators. And for this quantum microscope, right? Because we already got this real snapshot, right? So there's another branch people can just, because people just think it might be there's more information than we thought in this project environment, right? We just needed to use machine learning to find out what the hidden information is. So this is just one example. So people just use a CNN. So they train on some numerical data, right? So they get this PyFlock VBS data, and they also get this geometric string data. So they just prepare this data numerically and train the models numerically, and then use the CNN model to declassify the real snapshot to see the real experiment data closer to which one, right? Closer to the RBB theorem or closer to the geometric string theorem. So there's a lot of stuff. Except about this real experiment data. So that's a long time ago, the 2016, right? There's a starting from synthetic data to classify phase transitions. And I apologize if I don't cite your paper, right? This is to my best knowledge. If I forgot, you know, just let me know. So I'll do the homework and cite it properly. So the first study, this is from the quantum Monte Carlo data and for the ICM model by Lei Wang. They use this to study the quantum critical point and also the critical temperature. And later, and the paper by Hu and the Vessel, and also later by Roger. And Roger's paper, I think this study, this transition for this ICM model, just only very, very small part, right? They look at different things, but they can they can use artificial neural network and CNN, and they can extrapolate this critical temperature and critical exponent, right? But this is just a continuous phase transition second order. So how about, you know, a little bit more complicated phase transitions like this, XY model, which is a KD type transitions, and the order parameters are not local, it's a long range order parameters. Can we do this? So, and also this CNN learning by computer is also from Roger's group. And then there's quite some beautiful results for this. So the model we are studying is this extended Hubbard model in 1D. So the question is why this model, right? So so this is, first of all, this is t equal to zero, right? Because it's 1D model. So we need to go to t equal to zero to see some true long range order or quasi long range order. So this is t equal to zero. So you do see this different phases, which you can, for this SDW, it's just a mod physics with this SDW excitations. And also you do see there's a charge density waves. And in principle, and in the sandwich between the CDW and the charge density wave, there's a, you know, another wave, another phase called the bound wave. This bound wave, the bound wave you can see on the right. So which you just see two type of, these two state degenerate, right? So you just got to dimerize the strong and the weak kinetic energy, this alternation. So this is the general idea. So the phase diagram for this is quite complicated. From this SDW to this bound order wave, which is a continuous phase transition. But people sometimes use BKT. So it should be BKT type, right? It just share some BKT critical behaviors, but it's not quite BKT. So BKT type to the bound order wave. And from bound order wave to CW, at a very weak U is a second order, at a very strong U is a first order. So that's a tricritical point, and that's critical ending point. It's quite complicated. So this the initial study. And also for this two degenerate bound order wave. So if you just use a finite open boundary condition, in principle, the ground state you can pick up is on the top, right? Because it can lower the energy. So, but the second one, there's a recent results. Turns out this the second this phase is a degenerate, which is not a ground state for any finite system. It's a topological non-trivial, right? So people do try to pin down this topological non-trivial phase. Okay, I think I need to skip this slide. But in general, what I want to say is why this is hard. So in principle, if you get this phase transitions, you want to study the order parameters. Use order parameters to study this phase transition, right? But for this bound order wave, you can think about the transition, because you get a strong and weak kinetic energy alternation, right? So in principle, you should calculate the correlators between strong kinetic energy correlators and do free transform in the pi direction. You can see some signal, right? But as you can see here, so as we fix U and we increase the V, and the curve just smooth. There's no clear signal tells you this is a continuous transition where it is. So in general, it's just quite hard. So by the way, this is from the borderline quantum Monte Carlo data. So it's some deviation, right? So, but I just want to say in general, this kind of stuff is very hard. So because we tried the borderline quantum Monte Carlo data and we tried all the machine learning techniques we can use, and the result is not good enough. So we just think, okay, because of the borderline is a finite temperature method, but as long as the temperature is low enough, we can simulate the ground state, right? If the temperature low enough, right? So, but we thought we just step back a little bit and we just want to generate the best possible data. So this is why we go to this DMRG. We use this variational uniform MPS. So this variational uniform MPS is formulated already in the thermodynamic limit. And because of this specific problems, we just use a two-side unicell, right? So you just get a two-side for inside the unicell, you get a two bonds. And we just want to simulate this. And what you can see on the left, it's we plotted the energy and the entropy for two bonds. You can see the entropy. And for this cut, what we do, because we got this UV diagrams, we just fix U and do a sweep of V, right? So in this case, we can cut through three different phases. So if we do this and in the SDW phase, you can just see the two sides or two bonds have same energy, but you know in the BOW, you see the splitting of the two energies. And in the CDW, you see a further splitting, right? And the same story happens for the entanglement entropy for the two bonds, right? In the SDW, because it's uniform, it should be had the same entanglement entropy. In the bond order wave, because you got a strong bond and weak bond, entanglement should tell you different information. So you get a splitting. And in the CDW, you also the bond should become the same. So you also get this same entropy. So you do see this splitting, right? So in other words, if you go to if you really go to this thermodynamic limit and you see some local observables, you can really see this phase transitions. I think this is the state of the art, the pinpoint, you know, the exact location of the phase transitions. And in principle, and also we can compute the correlation length and the entanglement entropy and check its dependence on the bond dimensions to see the convergence. I'm sorry, I needed to rush a little bit because I really want to finish on time. So if we get this ground state wave function and we get this wave function, in principle, we can sample from the wave function, right? And so what we do is just we fix this U at a certain point and we generate a bunch of V values. So for each V values, we get 50,000 samples. So how do we get these samples? We just get a ground state wave function, right? So we can, because it's infinite, but we can just put an orthogonal center at a certain place. And from that point, we just compute the reduced density matrix. And from reduced density matrix, we compute the probability of which configuration is. Because the local Hilbert space is just zero, double occupied, spin up, spin down. We compute that probability for one of them. And then we move to the next side. Like even the first side of the conditional, let's say spin up, what is the probability of the next side is spin down, right? We just compute this and sample this 1D chain, like this 50,000 samples. And if you get all the samples, we can just use we tried everything. We tried the principal component analysis, which is linear. We tried the nonlinear, use the kernel PCA and a variational autoencoder. We also tried the encoder and everything, but the message is more or less, you know, for this SDW and BOW transition, we don't see any signals. That's somehow it's a disappointment compared to some continuous phase transition like this ICING model, which you can really learn some physics from a very simple, very, very simple method like a PCA, right? You can learn the first the just magnetization and the second principal component just magnetic susceptibility, right? So, but here it's not the case. Because of the PCA doesn't work, and so we just try to get this, try different my third, and one of them is this multi-scale structural complexity, right? So this one can tell, somehow tells you the story. So let me slow down here a little bit, right? To explain this method a little bit. So in principle, you get this 1D chain. Let's say you get 100 side 1D chain, right? You get a different number of samples. You can concatenate this 1D chain to a long chain, right? So in principle, you just take all the samples belong to the same V and U, right? You concatenate them together. You just get one long chain, right? So in that case, somehow you just like you do this real space RG. So you figure out that there's a two set unit cell and you compute this average. And because if you do the average, that means, you know, the site will just reduce by half, right? So you just do a copy, a paste case to make sure that the site numbers stay the same, but you do this real space RG. After that, you can compute the first step and the second step, you can compute the distance between two of them. And then you need a minus some, you know, normalization, because you normalize this probably, you just minus the norm of two steps. And if for each step you can do this, it tells you how similar two samples is, right? If you do this, and after this, you just sum off all the numbers as shown here. So if you take this approach and compute this complexity numbers here, so what you can see is in the SDW phase, you just get one numbers, and in the bound order wave, you do see the splitting of two, which is similar to the energy and the entanglement entropy. And in the CDW, it just recollapse to the same curve. So in that sense, you might. So in that sense, the message here, so we are able to distinguish this very tricky and very subtle phase transitions. It's continuous and the BKT type, and we can distinguish the phase transition here. So that's the message. But if I tell you that's all the message, it's a lie. So there's some caveats, right? Because of this, we generated the wave function in the thermodynamic limit directly. Right, so because of the BOW, the bound order wave is 240 degenerate, and the SDW is just continuous symmetric, right? So you should have the infinite numbers, but the BOW is 240 degenerate. So in order to see this bifurcation, we need to try to keep user sample from the same degenerate state, like this, all these red squares, they are from one of the degenerate state sample, and this blue circles is from one of the degenerate states. If you somehow mix the state together and you want to do this complexity analysis, and also you just see these two curves, just, you know, do the average, and there's no signals of this transition at all. Yeah, so this is just the caveats that I want to point out. But in principle, in experiment, we can, you know, pick up one of the degenerate state, which can either we can use the open boundary condition on the finite lattice, or you can just use a pinning field, so to pick up this state. So in that case, I think we have some machinery to distinguish this continuous phase transition, and also the final shot. Yeah, the final, we can construct this phase diagrams with very high accuracy, I think. Yeah. So I think this is just the final message of the second paper I want to talk about. It's just a use this variational uniform MPS in the thermodynamic limit to generate the best quality of data, and try different machine learning technique to see if we can use this density snapshots, you know, this real space projective measurement to discover some off diagonal Lorentz order. So yeah, it's doable, but you need to be careful with the degeneracy and the symmetry. Yeah. And the last and the final. So I really want to thank all of my collaborators. So for Yuan Yao and Antoine Shiwei, they helped me a lot on the first project with the Hubbard model. And for Javier and Matt Fishman and Jesus Sells and Asan Kanami and Richard Skelter, we collaborated on the second paper. They really helped me a lot. And also I want to thank George Bocconi and Miles. They are not on the paper, but at a certain time, they really jump in to help me solve some technical issues, and we still have a lot of ongoing projects. So I really appreciate their help. With that, I think I thank you for your attention.
Ivo, applause. Nice talk. So just quick clarification. So on that last, the whole last part, you're only dealing with the basis that is the local Hilbert space of size 4, right? The snapshots are empty, electron spin up, electron spin down, double occupied.
Yes.
And so that's not informationally complete in a tomographic sense for the Hubbard model, right? As in, you can't reconstruct the entire wave function from that, or can you?
I don't think you can reconstruct all the. I don't think you can reconstruct the entire wave function. And also, Roger, I want to mention this. It's like if you run DMRG, right? So at least for I tensor right now, so you do have U1 symmetry. You don't have a non-abelian as U2 symmetry, right? So you somehow need to conserve as Z. So, but you know, for the spin density wave, right? The SZ should not. It turns out for the Wump's algorithms, it just converge to some result with some finite but negligible SZ, right? But which is not right. So, in order to make this up, so for the SDW, each time before generated samples, we do the rotation, a global rotation, right? We just generate some random angles and we remove the SZ conservation. We just rotated the SZ, then we generated the samples from zero spin up, spin down.
I see.
I'm saying this post process for the charge density and this, for CDW, BRW is fine, right? But the SDW phase, we do try to reconstruct at least, somehow to our best the SU2 symmetry. Yeah.
Thanks. Got it. Other questions? Questions from Zoom.
I have a question, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the determinant Monte Carlo for the Hubbard model, I believe they use a three-band Hubbard model. Is it necessary, and is it something that you've thought of? Because it seems like you can get the correct state with one band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really a very good question. Thank you so much. I think in general, right, if you start, okay, so first of all, for this DQMC readout, indeed, this is from the single band because it's from this MPJ. This is a single band Hubbard model, but it's okay. Key prime is not equal to zero. In the paper above, they do try this three-band Hubbard model, right? So that's the case. So in general, because original, you got this copper oxide plane, right? You do need three bands, right? This is the wire John Rice, they come out, right? Say effectively one-band model is effective, to describe this. In principle, three-band is very interesting. We are thinking about that. But, before move on that, we want to figure out everything about this one-band model to our best at a certain parameter region, right? So yes, we are very interested in three-bands. But before three-bands, there's another interesting point, which how about the T-prime? Because all I show here is the T-prime equal to zero, right? But how about you turn on T-prime? What are the effect of T-prime on superconductivity? What are the T-prime effect on long-range or short-range spin charge orders? If there's a long range order, what's the wavelength, right? Because I can say the T prime, if you turn on T prime, we do see some data suggest at a certain region, the stripe, either the phase just from a stripe order to a half field stripe, from field stripe to half field stripe, which is consistent with the experiment data. So the T prime is really plays some important role there. So that is something what we are working on before moving to this three band Hubbard model. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Do I answer your question?
Yeah, that's very good. Thanks.
Bruce. Hi.
Yes. Yeah. Hi. Hi, Roger. So thanks very much for this interesting talk. There's something very, I think, quite simple at the beginning, actually on this slide, that I didn't quite follow, which was the distinction between the fill stripe and the half filled stripe. Because they both seem to have the increased charge density with the pi phase shift between the two antiferromagnetic domains. But could you just clarify the difference between the two? And it's the filled stripe that actually appears experimentally in the Tranquada results, correct?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't do a very good job to explain this. Yeah, I'll explain this. So in general, the first of all, in the Tranquada paper, the stripe, this is a half field stripe. It's not a field stripe. So for this vertical stripe, this is a half field, right? It's not a field. So
it's half field along the stripe, you mean. Is that correct? Is that you're alternating between the the filled circle and the unfilled circle, or is that is that?
So this experiment is half filled stripe, but still I want to clarify this. So in experiment you see this half filled stripe, but in this numerical data, if t prime equal to zero, you do see filled stripe. So the difference between these two is the filled stripe for the spin and the charge orders, both of them, the wavelengths are twice of the half filled stripe. Right. So the wavelength is twice. And also, if you want to think about the new real space picture, so if you can go wider, so that means it shows on average how many hole per length. So the field stripe is just one hole per side, and the half field just a half hole per side, maybe a one hole per two sides. Yeah, that's right. That's the case. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's clear. Thank you.
Goodness.
Thanks, Bruce. Any other questions? Okay, I think let's thank Bo again.